It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany, this is my show, and today we are at Destruction, New Japan's pay-per-view, pay-per-view tour series thing of the last week or so. A big series of shows where different things happened and different kind of things were going on. It was a little bit strange. There was no real heavyweight, junior heavyweight thing going on like you normally get, but there was a junior heavyweight match. And there was a lot of different main eventers, and it was an opportunity to do things differently. So to discuss that today, I have Mr. Alex Edwards of WrestleTalk TV. How are you, sir? Joining us today, we have Mr. Alex Edwards. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. And welcome back after your little layoff there, and return for the G1 thanks. Climax.
It's been a little while, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been nice.
I guess we all needed a bit of a break after the G1.
You went into a darkened room and lay down for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And Mr. Alex Watt of Unilad, how are you, sir?
I'm good. It's actually Alex Watt Baby now.
Alex Watt Baby.
That's what I'm going by. It's good to be back talking New Japan. I, too, have not watched a lot since the G1 ended, so it was interesting to jump back in.
Yeah, we normally have Chelsea Spolin with us on New Japan shows, but it's been a bit of a scheduling problem this weekend, as I can't record this weekend. So Alex Edwards has kindly jumped in, but Chelsea will be back, I believe, next week. Hopefully she will be next week, because we're talking New Japan again next week. But we'll get to that at the end of the show. Okay, so we'll go for a short break, and then we'll come back with talk of New Japan.
WrestlePlus.com is the brand new home of incredible online wrestling content, featuring uncensored shoot interview classics, full series of WrestleTalk TV and British Wrestling Weekly, exclusive documentaries, British wrestling's biggest names before they were stars, an incredible podcast collection, up to 90% off merchandise offers, and the brand new Power Slammed e-magazine forwarded by Finn Martin himself. WrestlePlus has thousands of hours of content with new and exclusive releases added regularly. You can join today for the stupidly low price of just £4.99 a month. Wrestle Plus, because this is wrestling.
Welcome back. Right, the New Japan shows, the Destruction series, take place in three different cities. It's three full pay-per-views, 2 3-hour shows and a 4-hour show, as I watch my timestamps very carefully this week. Lots of stuff going on. All the titles are defended at one point or another. A very interesting series of shows. What's your overall view of this idea of a 3-show set? We have the 2-show set at the beginning of the year with New Beginnings. Mr. Edwards, what did you think of this idea of the 3-show set?
I am not too positive on it, I guess. I think things were spread a little bit too thin, in that you had sort of, let's say, 6 sort of big matches that you wanted to see, and those together would have made a really, really good card if it was just the 1 show. But splitting them up across the 3, you had a lot of filler, like a lot of just random tag matches for the sake of getting people on the card. So, I mean, you still had some good stuff in there. Like, the matches that we were expecting to be good were still good, but there was a lot of filler there as well.
Yeah, I can see definitely what you're getting at with that. Mr. Watt, what did you think, sir?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I think it's nice that other matches, if you like, that aren't IWGP heavyweight title matches get to headline the show, so you're getting different main events. But yeah, I think if it was just the main matches that we're probably going to cover over the course of the podcast, it would have been a really good show, just 1 show as it was. Yeah, it probably was spread a little bit too thin across 3, but there was some very good stuff across them. That's for sure.
Yeah,
I guess that's something as well, where we had 3 shows, but there wasn't an IWGP heavyweight title defense on all 3 of them.
Yeah,
it was more building up to next month.
Yeah, for those who don't know, actually it's in a week's time. I think it's 10th of October, which is King of Pro Wrestling.
That's come quickly.
Yeah, it's King of Pro Wrestling is the next major event, and we'll probably be talking about that in less than 3 weeks. King of Pro Wrestling is kind of their SummerSlam, isn't it? It's the big mid-year show that sets up the big push towards Wrestle Kingdom. So, yeah, there was a lot going on in here. It's kind of a minor event, and you can tell that the company doesn't take it as seriously. They don't bring in, like, the Ring of Honor commentary crew to give an English commentary. It's just Japanese commentary available. The matches, I think it's just an experimentation ground. It's a bit of a sandbox for who's going to get pushes and who's going to do things differently. Now, today we're only going to talk about the main matches because obviously we had 10 hours of wrestling to watch, so we kind of have to distill this down because we can't do an hour-long podcast. Well, it'll probably be a bit more than an hour long as usual when we talk about New Japan, but you know, we're trying to get to the crux of the matter. So we'll have a bit of a quick roundup of what's happened in the undercard matches. We'll go through those first. Rapinga Vice defeated David Finlay and Henare, who is a new rookie, a young lion, as they say. And I'd like to mention Dave Finlay's spectacular new tights. Now he's graduated from the dojo. A very fetching leopard print, which is just amazing, and seriously makes him look like an 80s stripper from Barnsley. I have to really
strong shout.
Yeah, I really have to say, David, you have outdone yourself in the sartorial elegance that is looks like you've skinned a cheetah. Honestly, it's just something else. David, if
I also love the fact that he's so pale as well, which looks even better with the leopard skin tones.
Yes, Irishmen and Germans, known for their natural tanning ability in one person.
I think the elite needs to tell him about their local tanning salon.
Would he go? Probably not. yeah, other matches that were interesting. Well, Manabu Nakanishi, old Lumpy himself, tagged with Yuji Nagata to defeat Captain New Japan and Yoshitatsu. That will be important later in the show. We'll talk about that in a bit. Tiger Master Togi Makabe.
Believe it or not.
Yeah, believe it or not, we will. That's really important. Trust us.
As I say, we're still all reeling from the Captain New Japan stuff.
So. Yeah, we have to dissect that deeply. Tiger Mask Togi Makabe and Tomohiko Honma defeated Hiroshi Tenzan, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Satoshi Kojima. Chaos lineup of Gedo, Hiroki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii defeated Bullet Club, Chase Owens, Tama Tonga, and Tanga Roa. Kyle O'Reilly defeated Juice Robinson, and then we get to the business end of the show. Kazuchika Okada, Will Ospreay, and Yoshihashi defeat Bullet Club, Bad Luck Fale, Kenny Omega, and Yujihiro Takahashi. Usually when you get the big names in there, you have some things happen, but this was, I think it was Yoshihashi getting a victory, wasn't it? I can't remember who got the pinfall in this one.
I think it was Yoshihashi to build up to the main event of the next night.
Yeah, he pinned Takahashi, didn't he? So no one loses anything. Yoshihashi gains something, and it makes him look like a serious threat to Kenny Omega, which was not a bad plan. And then we'll get to the serious stuff. Los Ignorables de Japón, Evil Sonata, and Tetsuya Naito defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi, Michael Elgin, and Ryusuke Taguchi. I really enjoyed this six-man match, and it was important because it set up Michael Elgin's knee injury, which will become, again, important in a couple of shows' time. What did you think of this match? Mr. Edwards first.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, it's what you'd sort of expect from just a six-man tag match with a couple of the top guys and a bunch of sort of the mid-card guys. It was good. It wasn't anything sort of mind-blowing, but it got that story of Elgin's knee across, which, like you said, will be important in a later match. So, yeah, good stuff.
Mr. Watts, sir?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's funny we were saying about the three-show thing. Like, that's something where it is effective because you can set something up, like we said, with Yoshihashi's win to make him look strong going into the next show, and with Elgin's knee injury, which then would play for the next shows up until the main event of, yeah, it was the final show, Naito, wasn't it? So, yeah, I think that is a positive for the format. But yeah, the match itself was nothing amazing, but did the job really of which you would expect with that talent involved, that they would be able to produce a very good match.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too. And, you know, yeah, that level of talent, they're not going to stuff it up, are they? They did a good job and they got the stories told that they needed to tell. And, yeah, and it just proved like how over Elgin was that people were so into this match and picked up on that that storyline. You know, Elgin's done really well in the last 12 months, so really to get over to this level in Japan, and I've really impressed with him. Then we move on to the NEVER Openweight Championship. Katsuyori Shibata defeated Bobby Fish in a match that was kind of, well, it was interesting. I'm not sure the crowd got into it as much. They certainly got into it later in the match. It was a bit of a slow burn, old school New Japan match, which you kind of expect with a couple of shoot-based wrestlers. Bobby Fish was pretty good, of course, Ring of Honor television champion, looking for his second championship this year. Not quite making it against Mr. Shibata. It was well done, though. I like this. What did you think of this, Alex Watt?
Yeah, I agree on the... I wonder if they were working a slightly slower pace to begin with, because Shibata was clearly injured. He was working Tomohiro Ishii style with, like, the most tape, like, ever. Just every limb seemed to be taped up, and, you know, he obviously got pulled from the rest of the tour after the match because he's got a spine injury, which is a bit worrying. I wonder if... as they might have gone for that idea anyway because of their styles, but it wouldn't shock me if they worked a little bit slower. You know, Shibata in some matches, he'll just go immediately into like beating the crap out of someone. Maybe they would have gone for that angle if he wasn't dealing with the injuries. Once it got going, it was pretty much what you would expect, which was very, very stiff.
Yes.
With one of... I mean, Shibata has thrown some horrible headbutts in his time, but that one at the end of this match was up there with worst I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was a bit car crash watching this. They were really going for it by the end, and Bobby was trying to establish himself. Obviously, it's a bit of a difficult position for them coming in as a junior heavyweight. The open weight championship has always been about juniors and heavyweights wrestling each other, you know, open weight championship. There's supposed to be no restrictions on it, but it's not really fallen that way in the last 3 or 4 years with Tomohiro Ishii, Makabe, and those guys being the champion. They can't really necessarily work with smaller guys and make them look good necessarily because they could just bulldoze them. So Shibata did well to make this match work and made Bobby Fish look like a serious challenger to the title. Mr. Edwards, sir, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought, considering sort of the condition Shibata was in, I thought it was a good match. I'm wondering if maybe they went a bit too stiff because of Shibata's injury. There were quite a few sort of bumps that he took where he landed right on his neck, and I was cringing every time it happened. So I'm wondering if maybe they did a bit too much for what Shibata was actually able to do, and that's why he was pulled from the rest of the tour.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to complain. It was a good match, but yeah, I'm just wondering if they might have done a bit too much and gone a bit too far with it. I mean, I guess that's the Japanese way, where they don't want to sort of disappoint the fans by not giving it their all. But
yeah,
at the same time, you've got to sort of think of your long-term health, and especially with like a spine injury, it's probably better to err on the side of safety.
Yeah, especially with another major event as well, less than a month away, where you're probably going to be defending the championship because it's a big show. I agree.
And it looks like it'll be against Kyle O'Reilly as well, if the aftermath of this match was anything to go by. And that's not exact. They're not going to take it easy on one another either, are they?
No, so definitely not.
I mean, do you think they might consider stripping Shibata of the title if he doesn't sort of get better in time for that match?
That's happened before. Makabe came down with an incredibly bad case of the flu, 18 months ago, and was stripped of the championship then. So I think that's a fairly reasonable thing to do for a health and safety point of view and for the future of Shibata's career, because he's a guy they obviously see an awful lot of good in. So yeah, I'd agree with that, really. I think that's not a bad thing to say.
If they did, who would you want to see get the title? Would it be Kyle O'Reilly or Bobby Fish or someone like that? Or would you want to see it go back to like Ishii or something like that?
I think Ishii's done with this championship. He's done all he could with it. So someone new, and I think it would generally, if you had a genuine junior heavyweight take the championship, it would put a new angle and a new twist on it and get it back to where it was supposed to be going. That would be my kind of take.
Yeah, I could see that.
So that's what I think.
But then with the overall story of these three shows where you see Losin Gobernable is sort of starting to collect the titles together, do you think maybe one of them, like Evil or Sanada, getting it would be a way to go?
Sanada's probably the most likely. He's the guy I see doing the most stuff with it as an outsider as well. That kind of gives him an edge too. What do you think, Mr. Watt?
Yeah, I'd agree on the Sonata thing. I was going to bring that up later on, actually, whether they're going to start getting the majority of the belts. We'll obviously talk about Naito and Bushi shortly. Yeah, it wouldn't shock me if Sonata won the NEVER title and they, you know, start to get a bit of a monopoly on all the titles.
Yeah, it's something not necessarily that they like doing, but it would be maybe worthwhile to really cement Los Ignorables, because there's only four of them compared with like the eight people in Chaos and the seven or nine people in Bullet Club. So, yeah, it might be worthwhile.
More than that now, I think.
Yeah, you say that.
When you add in all the NWA members, the CMLL members, I can't remember how many others people in Bullet Club, but there you go. A Ring of Honor members now too. So, yeah. We'll move on there, though, to the main event of Destruction in Tokyo, which is Bushi defeating Kushida for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. And I can hear Marcus Green's disappointment all the way from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Kushida, just a cracking match, though. It just really, really good. Bushi has produced some really good stuff since turning heel, and this was another example of that. And it told a different story to the one we saw earlier in the year at New Beginnings. I was really impressed with how Bushi kind of like gone back through the ranks and made his way to the championship again, and it's been a good story to tell. Alex Watt, what did you think of this?
Yeah, it was good. I didn't think it was quite as good as the match they had earlier in the year, but it was still very good, and it was an interesting way to do it in terms of they did the interference, which was probably inevitable, and obviously Bushi was cheating any chance he could because that's what Los Ignorables do. But it didn't... They did it in such a way that it didn't play into the finish. It sort of happened in the middle of the match. So it meant that Bushi beat Kushida relatively clean, which makes him come out of it stronger, if you like, than if it had just been interference and that's why he wins. Obviously, you can point to it that that is why he won, because he sprayed mist in Kushida's eyes and all that stuff. But I thought it was a clever way to do it. But then at the same time, others, I've heard people say it maybe killed the momentum of the match a little bit. So it's you can take either point. But yeah, I've really liked Bushi's work. I like they came in all white as well, which yeah. seems to be like the done thing. If you're like coming for a second title shot in New Japan, you have to like dress yourself entirely in white nowadays. And I wasn't quite sure at the end whether I thought it was like a great match or not, or whether I was slightly disappointed by it. But I don't know what you guys thought about that.
I think it was a good story, well told, not necessarily a great match. But the two things don't necessarily have to be mutually exclusive. You know, I think it was a good story, well told, and the players played their parts really well. And it leaves a load of more options, which the obvious thing is for Kushida to work his way back to the Wrestle Kingdom title shot. Unless they can think of somebody else they'd like to push, maybe Young Ospreay. I don't know. And obviously, if they did push Ospreay to the championship, that'd be a good excuse to keep him around. Because obviously, Ospreay is getting a lot of interest as of late, and they've lost a lot of guys, especially Gaijins, who had a lot of interest. So, I don't know. We'll see what goes on there. But Mr. Edwards, what did you think of this particular main event?
Yeah, I think I agree with you guys. I thought both guys did a really good job. And there was some cool stuff in there. But like Alex said, at the end of it, I wasn't sure how much I liked it or didn't. Yeah, like you said, it was well executed. But I don't know, I think I fall on the side of the interference sort of took away from it a little bit for me. It seemed a bit random. Like, I like that it didn't have sort of an effect on the finish of the match and that Bushi looks strong coming out of it, but then that makes me think, why even do it in the first place?
I think that
if it's not going to have any sort of impact on the ending.
I think that's kind of a New Japan thing. Like, you do get interference, even Bullet Club or LIJ, they interfere, but it never really affects the finish, ever. You know, and I think that's partly trying not to ruin the prestige of the title and just sow seeds of, well, these guys cheated, see, they had an advantage. And it doesn't seem to affect fan response, no matter how heelish people are. Naito is still massively popular in certain places, as we saw later in the series. You know. So it's
but
kind
it's
of...
worth...
Sorry, Alex.
Sorry to cut in, but like, I was wondering, like, is the interference becoming a bit too commonplace now, just from like we're obviously going to talk about the main events of the other two shows, but there was interference in every one of the main events, and significant interference as well. It's like, is it being a bit overdone now that maybe it is starting to take away from the matches a little bit?
I think possibly.
I'm wondering if it... Sorry, you go ahead.
I think possibly it's true. I think you're right. I think the trouble is, it's kind of the nature when you've got two top line factions like Bullet Club and LIJ, who are both interference led, and Chaos don't really interfere in, they'll protect their friends, but they don't really interfere in the matches. I never really did, even when they were full on heels. They maybe do a beatdown after the match, but they won't interfere in the match because that's against the spirit of Strong Style. So, yeah, it's, maybe it is. But having said that, Naito's done it without interference this year, hasn't he? There was no interference in the G1.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so, I don't know. Mr. Edwards, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm wondering if it, with it being such commonplace now, along with things like brawling around the ring and weapons and that sort of thing, it sort of makes the referees look a bit stupid.
Yeah.
It sort of, it makes them a bit ineffective where they're not really doing anything other than counting a pinfall. I think it will be, especially with the way the rest of the product is presented as this sort of legitimate sport, I think it would be good to get some more order back in things and get the rules actually meaning something again. I mean, I guess that's the thing with all wrestling at the moment, is the rules are just sort of thrown away a bit sometimes, but I think it just, it's a bit of a weird contrast to the rest of how New Japan presents itself.
Yeah, I mean, me and Marcus last week were talking about TNA's Grand Championship and the new rules implied for that, and how happy we were that there was rules to something that was actually stipulated and followed, because you can't break the rules if you don't know what they are in the first place. So, I think you're right. I think, and especially with Red Shoes, who's always been so vehemently about enforcing the rules and making sure it's a fair playing field. And he took two big ref bumps in this series, and that necessarily isn't kind of the thing he normally does. So, yeah, maybe they are overstepping the mark a little bit with it. But we'll move on to night two, which was Destruction in Hiroshima. And the undercard was Hiroshi Tenzan, Ricochet, and Satoshi Kojima. Ricochet joining Tenkozy, the legendary tag team, to defeat Captain New Japan, Togi Makabe, and Yoshitatsu. Interesting point, Ricochet having matching attire to Tenkozy for the evening, which I thought was a nice touch. And did for the next series as well, because he was tagging with Kojima the next night. Bobby Fish, Dave Finlay, Kyle O'Reilly, and Rizuki Taguchi, all junior heavyweights, defeated Manubi Nakanishi, old Lumpy himself, Tiger Mask, Tomoki Mahonma, and Yuji Nagata, mostly heavyweights. This was an interesting thing because it was kind of the ongoing thread of this series of shows was junior heavyweights versus heavyweights. The one reason why I wanted to mention this match is there's one point where the director gets cut out and he just goes to the wide shot of the ring, and Tiger Mask is just going to do a crossbody to the floor. So it just looks like Tiger Mask has fallen out the sky. It was just like, it was brilliant. Just completely by accident. But it's just like, you hear the crowd go, what? And there's this yellow flash just goes across the screen. Well worth looking at just for that. Gorillas of Destiny defeated Rapingi, Vice, Beretta, and Romero. Chaos, Hiroki, Goto, Tomohiro Ishii defeated Chase Owens and Yujiro Takahashi. And Hiroshi Tenzan, Juice Robinson, Kushida, and Michael Elden defeated all of Los Ignorables de Japón in quite an entertaining match. And then we got to the business end of this particular card. And this was actually, you know, two championship matches, a top-level singles match, and a shot at the IWGP Heavyweight Championship, all defended on this show. The Briscoe Brothers versus the Young Bucks, possibly the ultimate tag match in this day and age, and it was on this particular show in Hiroshima. I don't know how many times these two teams have wrestled each other before around the world, but it's always something a bit special, and this was no real exception. This was very, very good stuff from both teams, I thought. Maybe not their best outing, but certainly well worth watching. What did you think, Mr. Edwards?
I mean, it was impressive from the sort of standpoint of athletic moves and stuff they've done, but from the sort of standpoint of story, I mean, the story going into the match was that the Young Bucks are sort of hinting that they want to unify the tag divisions by winning the heavyweight tag titles while they're the junior tag champions, which sort of meant that in this match they were sort of even though they're heels, they were sort of playing the underdogs, which was a bit strange. It all seemed a bit backwards, where you had the Briscoes sort of cutting them off and isolating one of the Bucks while the other... It was like the roles were reversed, and it was a bit weird. As I said, they did some really cool stuff in here, but yeah, it's just... I think it's a problem with the American indie scene as a whole at the moment, where you hit a lot of cool looking moves, but then when you try and place them into a story, it's sort of, you can get a bit lost.
Yeah, I think that's a bookism as well. They're usually quite better at it than doing it than in this particular case. You know, you look at some of the stuff they've done in PWG and some of the stuff they've done in Ring of Honor, they've put the moves in the right places to tell the story correctly. And even some of like the crazy matches, like the three ways at Wrestle Kingdom, they've done really, really well to make those work. Sorry, the four ways. They've done really a lot of the legwork to make them work to by telling story through big moves. So I can see what you're saying with this one.
And that's sort of what disappointed me a little bit about this match, where you know that both teams can do really well. And I think what made this match suffer a little bit is that I'm not sure if the crowd really know who the Briscoe brothers are that well yet. And so I think maybe they resorted to sort of doing big moves to get a reaction.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of trying to get over a story.
Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying there. Alex Watt, what did you think?
Yeah, but I was pretty much going to say the same thing. Like, it was exciting. Like, it was a tremendous spot fest and it was fun to watch. But it did feel like... what, just one spot after another, like they were just running through all their cool double team moves. And to be fair, both teams have some incredible double team moves, but it did feel like it was like, we've done that spot and kick out, and now let's do this spot and kick out. And there was a couple where it was like, so like the avalanche fucking razor's edge into neck breaker thing, and then Matt kicks out, and it's like, really?
Yeah.
Just doing a straight kick out from that. Okay. So yeah, it was a bit crazy at times. And also the fact that, yeah, I thought the Bucks were clearly working babyface as well, which was a strange phenomenon.
Yeah.
It was a great spot fest, but yeah, not necessarily a great match, which was a bit of a shame because you sort of expect like maybe something a little bit better from these two, because like we say, the Bucks, for instance, what they did with like Time Splitters, for instance, where it is there's lots of crazy spots in that match, but it all flows really smartly and it's telling a cohesive story. But then maybe it is like because the crowd don't know the Briscoes that well yet, so it's like, let's show them what we can do. Maybe they were thinking along those lines. And I'm also not sure what the Briscoes were wearing.
It looked like they were wearing Christmas trees. It was really weird.
I believe
just like weird grass skirts around their like either leg. It was like, I never thought that a team would wear more ridiculous outfits than the Young Bucks. Like, that was something to behold.
I believe they are a form of hunting outfit that help you with camouflage when hunting for ducks.
Right.
I'm making that assumption because Jay and Mark love their guns, so...
There is that. They are in a wrestling ring, though, not hiding in long grass, so it's the Bucks could see them. Like, the camouflage wasn't working great in that scenario.
Well, speaking of which, at the end of this match, which the Bucks lost, Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Rhea, came down and challenged the Briscoe brothers by attacking them from behind. There was an interesting little exchange. Was like the Bucks didn't like help out G.O.D. even though they're both Bullet Club. They just kind of went, "All right, then, fair enough. Bye, lads," and left. All right, I realize you're getting out of the way because you've lost, and that's the tradition, is the losers go. But you're like, you're Bullet Club. You don't screw with tradition. You screw with tradition all the time. So it's like, just a bit weird. Didn't quite seem to tack together, unless they were just trying to get the way out of the way to give the new team some sense of, like, you know, importance, because, which I didn't think was too bad. Not a bad idea, but it just seemed a bit strange because it's like, you're Bullet Club, then just go after them, surely.
But, and the Bucks love giving people a kick in from behind. That's their whole thing.
That's their deal.
Yeah, sorry, I was gonna ask what. So, in terms of like this unification thing that the books were obviously teasing beforehand. Is that just not happening now? There was a lot of talk beforehand that maybe they'd decide, like Jado and Gedo had decided they were going to unify the tag divisions to make it a bit more streamlined. But is that just not happening? It felt a little strange that it was like put out there and then it was like, and they haven't won and now we'll move on.
Well, they have the open weight tag division now, don't they, as well?
True.
So
yeah.
That kind of covers both of them, but it's tricky, isn't it? It's really hard work.
I mean, I think it could really do with being unified. I mean, you look at both divisions, and at the moment, the junior tag division is pretty bare bones. And then the heavyweights are just an endless stream of gaijin heel teams facing off against each other.
Yeah.
I think unifying them could give both a bit more depth and sort of rejuvenate the whole tag scene in the company.
And you've always got the open weight tag team championship to act as a secondary championship, as a stepping stone to the major championship, then, haven't you? So, it's a bit tricky. I can see what you're saying. When you consider like 3 years ago, like where the junior heavyweight tag team division was, and it was the best tag division in the world. And they had the best teams going for it. And the books have done, well, 4 times champions. You know, Rapingi Vice, 2 times champions. They've done it all. You know, everyone's done everything that they could do with that. And whereas they used to split people up to go after the singles championship, they don't necessarily need to do that now because they've got a strong singles division. So it's a bit six of one, half a dozen of the other. Where did they go with it? And I could see it working both ways. But,
I think the main thing to do with is some more Japanese teams. It seems to be a lot of the tag teams are foreigners and there aren't that many sort of homegrown Japanese teams there.
Yeah.
Outside of, I guess, like Goto and Ishii at the moment and GBH.
And Tenkozy.
And Tenkoji, yeah. I don't know.
I think that's one story they could tell. You could just tell the story of Tenkoji going for the championship one more time. You know, they could get a good run out of that. I know there's not an awful lot left for those two to do. And I think one, you know, like they did with the G1, they don't have to win it. Just tell that story.
You know. Yeah, I think that would be good.
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll move on anyway because we've got a lot to cover tonight. Morning for you, but it's Thursday night for us. Adam Cole defeated Will Ospreay for the Ring of Honor World Championship in 12 minutes and 17 seconds. Interesting little match this. Cole getting himself over very, very well with the Japanese crowd as, you know, a bit of a jerk, which is his job. And Ospreay doing his Ospreyishness, as the ladies at SummerSlots call him. Chav Assassin's Creed, that was it. Yeah. What do you think of this, Mr. Watt?
Yeah, baby.
Will you stop that? It's like Bobby Heenan. Sorry.
You said that. Pardon?
It's like Bobby Heenan Gorilla Monsoon we're getting into here. Carry on.
Yeah, he said baby a lot. He was really getting that catchphrase over. Like he was determined to be like, this is what I say, and you guys will be cheering it back in by the next show. And to be fair, they pretty much were. So it paid off. It was a good match. Like I think Cole introduced himself well to the crowd. Pretty much it's what you would expect. He gets the heat on Ospreay and then the big comeback from Ospreay, and he just kind of had to be there for all of Ospreay's crazy moves. I think he had trouble with a couple, like the standing Spanish fly, like could have gone very wrong because he did not go with it at all. But Ospreay, to his credit, kind of
dragged him,
shifted
with
him midair. Basically, like it was smart. Like he sort of like shifted himself in midair to make it still look good. Also, what helped it as well, I think, was the fact that there was genuine doubt over who might win because Ospreay like does the occasional job in Ring of Honor, whereas like I think if Cole faces any the Japanese guys, it's a bit more of a difficult sell to believe that one of them would beat him.
Yeah.
So I think it added that drama to it as well, which really helped the match.
Mr. Edwards.
Yeah, I think this match did sort of what it set out to do and introduce Adam Cole to the Japanese crowd. I think, like you said, he was trying really, really hard to get that catchphrase over, and it worked. Yeah, I mean, it was good. It was an okay match. I don't. When you compare it to sort of the main event of this show and then the main event of the next night, it wasn't anything that sort of is up there in the sort of upper echelon of matches from these set of shows, but I think it did its job and it did it well, and I'm excited to see what Adam Cole does in New Japan going forward.
Will Ospreay, his selling is still terrible sometimes. I think
it's interesting, like, because some matches, so his first match against Kushida, I thought is, you know, his first match in the company when he challenged for the title. I mean, I thought his selling was incredible, but that, and like, the Super Juniors final as well, but then other times, yeah, he just sort of seems to forget. Like, it's quite strange. Like, he goes from one extreme to another.
I think Alan Blaystock on Twitter described him this week as like a 12-year-old playing a video game sometimes, you know, and it just does take you out the moment a little bit, and it worries me.
I think that's similar to what we were saying a bit with the Bucks and the Briscoes earlier, where it's like you're trying to get so much stuff in that's like you got to remember to do the stuff in between as well. Like, you know, if you land on your head, you can't like suddenly be doing like another crazy move 2 seconds later. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. All right, then we'll move on. Kazuchika Okada defeats Bad Luck Fale in a singles match. Kind of typical Okada Fale singles match, really. Not a lot more to be said about it. Very good for what it was. Fale continues to improve and impress, but he wasn't going to do anything spectacular like beat Okada, I don't think. So it was slightly predictable, but it was good for what it was. An entertaining 17 minutes, and it shows that Fale can still go at main event level and get something worthwhile out of it. That big man moveset he has got fine-tuned, I think, in the last couple of years. Alex Watt, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I thought, yeah, pretty much what you've said. Like, it was good for what it was. I don't think it was as good. They wrestled last year, I want to say around February, March time. They had a really good match. This wasn't as good as that. It's still mental that Okada can get Fale up in the tombstone. I think that every time they wrestle.
It gave him a gorilla press in this match.
Yeah. He's deceptively strong, Okada, I think. But yeah, it felt very much like a placeholder match. Like, Okada for the whole three events, like the whole destruction, it's like he's just sort of killing time until he faces Marufuji basically next month. And it was, nothing seemed to be like exerting him that much. It was, you know, it was that kind of tour for Okada. It felt like a little bit where it's like, he'll do the really good match next month, don't worry. So the other the strange part was it was a non-title match, and it kind of feels like, why wasn't it a title match? Was it just because no one would believe that Fale would take the belt off him? Or
I think there was actually a stipulation in this match where if Fale won, he'd get a title match on the New Zealand tour in November.
Right, that makes more sense. Yeah, because I was going to say, I mean, if Okada's wins anyway, why have it as a non-title match? Why not just have it as a title match if Okada was going to win anyway?
Yeah, well, I suppose you could say that Fale's put in a strong enough performance to get the championship shot as well.
He beat him in the G1 as well.
Yeah,
didn't he?
Yeah. So yeah, he deserves a championship shot, and if it's on that New Zealand tour, which makes sense because he's going to be the biggest thing on that New Zealand tour, so. It'd be interesting to see if he works face for that as well.
It makes perfect sense for him to get the shot on the New Zealand tour. It was just like, it's a strange type, because like, yeah, exactly like you say, like he beat him in the G1, which pretty much means he should get a title shot anyway. So why have the non-title match now? Like, why not just have him, if he's going to get the title shot on the New Zealand tour, just do that? Yeah, I don't know. Seems a bit strange.
Yeah, very bit weird. Alex Edwards, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it for what it was. Like you've said, it was they kept to the sort of simple story of Fale just targeting Okada's arm and trying to stop him hitting the Rainmaker. But of course, being Okada, he hit the Rainmaker anyway.
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, it was a simple story and they both told it well. I think Fale was good in this match, sort of playing that role of refusing to stay down whenever Okada hit him with something and just coming back hitting more big moves. And yeah, I just think, like we were saying, the booking was a bit strange. I guess it's like, it goes back to that problem of the filler having three shows where you need something for Okada to do.
Yeah.
And Fale's always sort of a good guy to just put in there for a filler match like this.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a bit of a weird one, but I guess we'll see if they do give him that shot on the New Zealand tour and what happens there.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what happens, wouldn't it? It'd be interesting to see if he works face as well for that tour. So, we'll see. And then we'll move on to the main event, which was Kenny Omega defending his Tokyo Dome IWGP Heavyweight Championship Challenge Right Certificate. They couldn't come up with a snappier name for it than that, could they? And he defeated Yoshihashi in one of his first main events in his hometown of Hiroshima, which was a very sensible thing to do, let's be honest. Stick in a big fan favorite in his hometown and give him the biggest heel in the company. Well done, New Japan Pro Wrestling. You are smart, smart people. And it was a cracking match, I have to say. And Yoshihashi really lived up to that main event billing. He was really, really good in this match. Best I've seen him wrestle in a long, long time. Kenny Omega, again, really, really good in this match. Maybe overdoing it a little bit, but that's the Kenny Omega thing. He overdoes everything. So, yeah, well done, I thought. Mr. Edwards, what did you think?
Yeah, I was going to say pretty much what you just said, where Kenny Omega maybe overdid it a little bit, but that's his thing. And yeah, Yoshihashi, since he was in the G1, he's been doing really, really well. He's been showing a lot of fire in his matches, and he is getting over as well. It's weird to think, if you go back a few years and think that Yoshihashi, of all people, was going to be one of the top babyfaces in the company and main eventing shows. It's really strange, but he's worked really hard and he's made it actually believable. And yeah, this is a good match. I think going into it, the main thing I was thinking is, what did he do to his hair? But
I was going to say, both of them were rocking interesting dye jobs.
But no, the match itself was good enough that I managed to forget about that pretty quickly and just enjoy what it was. It was good stuff and good by both guys.
Alex Watt, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I actually slightly preferred their G1 match, which obviously set this up. Probably because it was a bit shorter. I think the middle part of the match here was maybe a bit slow, but the finishing stretch was tremendous. Like, I think they've got good chemistry, Omega and Yoshihashi. And the thing was, they obviously had the hometown crowd, but they had the crowd believing on the near falls that he was going to, that he could beat Omega, which was like the tough sell going in, because I don't think anyone really believed that he had a chance of getting the briefcase off Omega. So the fact they were able to get those, you know, false finishes and have the crowd buying into it shows what good talents they are. So it was a very good match. Yeah, like I say, I just slightly preferred their G1 match a little bit more, but I still enjoyed this as well. I thought they did very well.
It was good. It was a good main event and a strong outing for Yoshihashi, which he needs to kind of like cement the idea of him being a main eventer again. And I think he's going to do well this year. I think 2017 could be Yoshihashi's year. And a few people have been saying that for the last couple of years, but I think it's good. I think he's doing good and cool stuff.
Good. I think we keep saying it's going to be his year every year. We've done that times on this podcast.
The Yoshihashi push is coming. It's gone. Yeah.
But feels like coming out of this year's G1, he's actually got some momentum. So hopefully he takes that into next year. What do we think of Goto getting the next shot, the briefcase? Because I'm assuming it's because Shibata's injured, because Shibata beat Omega in the G1, so he should probably be getting a shot. But it's a strange one, just because Omega already beat Goto, so why does Goto get a shot at the briefcase?
Well, I suppose it's just to quash any chances really there. Who was the other ones that beat him in G1, because I can't remember?
Shibata and Elgin. It was Elgin, the other guy who beat him.
Elgin's obviously, that's a serious threat, because that's the former Intercontinental Champion. Sorry to spoil the ending for you folks, but yeah. So I suppose he was probably a bigger threat than Goto. Goto's been on a downward spiral a little bit, so I suppose he's a nice one to fill out the pay-per-views that you need, you know, just to confirm things. I suppose that's the way they're thinking. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it is, like you said, because of Shibata, they're sort of worried that he won't be back in time to sort of have a big main event level match like that. And so there's like, who's a guy that's semi-believable will put Goto in there?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a very sensible call, really. Right then, we'll move on to the last night, which is Destruction in Kobe, which opened with Henare, Tiger Mask, and Reisuke Taguchi defeating Chaos, Trent Barretta, Rocky Romero, and Will Ospreay. 6 minutes and 57 seconds. I'll give a shout out to this match because for a couple of reasons. One, Chaos were working proper heel, and it was interesting to see Ospreay work heel. He didn't really do an awful lot of difference to when he was face, but I liked that. I was interested to see some variation. And there was a little bit of dissent between Barretta and Rocky Romero, which was interesting. Just like Rocky gets in and goes, "I got this," and then gets his ass whooped. And then you just hear Barretta going, "Get your shit together." So that was good. I like that. That was interesting. You know, got to tell a story. This is an interesting story. And I think like many things before, it won't go any further than that. It's just, you know, just an interesting story for a one night show. The next match, however, is fascinating, and we're going to talk a bit about this.
Are there no heroes left? Are there no heroes left in the world?
I was going to say that. Bullet Club, Chase Owens, and Yujihiro Takahashi defeat Hunter Club, Captain New Japan, and Yoshitatsu. But Captain New Japan is Captain New Japan no more. We'll give you a bit of layup here. Captain New Japan has been on a losing streak since, 2009?
forever.
And he wanted to be in Hunter Club, which is Yoshitatsu's little minor faction there. Just shift some t-shirts and give
which
Yoshitatsu.
Which is just Yoshitatsu.
Which is just Yoshitatsu.
It's a club where no one else is invited but Yoshitatsu, basically.
Yeah, and Yoshitatsu... he's kind of been a bit like wary of putting Captain New Japan in the club. And so he did it. He thought it'd be fair to do it by public vote. And as you know, the IWC affectionately referred to Captain New Japan as Captain Dickhead. You can imagine that it didn't go down well.
Captain fucking New Japan.
So as before the match, Yoshitatsu announces to the world that Captain New Japan has been kicked out of Hunter Club and embarrasses him in front of several thousand people in Kobe. And there is a massive reaction of Captain New Japan kicking the shit out of Yoshitatsu. And then Bullet Club take over the beating. They do all their finishes, including Captain New Japan's finisher, and Takahashi pins Yoshitatsu for the win. And Two Sweets, Captain New Japan, who is taken in the back as a member of Bullet Club. He is welcomed by Kenny Omega, who says, "Welcome, well done, but your gimmick is ridiculous. Get yourself a new name." And now he is Bone Soldier. And yes, indeed, as Alex said, there are no more heroes anymore.
I think the main thing coming out of this is Finn Balor's reaction online was amazing, where he tweeted a picture of him giving the coup de grace to Captain New Japan back when he was in Japan, and just the caption was just, "No!"
Well, see, at first I read it and I thought, he's really sad that Captain New Japan's turned heel. Then my mind clicks over and it's like, no, he's really upset that Captain New Japan's in Bullet Club.
Well, that video just been doing the rounds again, hasn't it, where he's just like, "Captain fucking New Japan, get the fuck out."
Oh dear. Devitt's swearing was like, everyone swears in New Japan if you engage in. Some of the Japanese wrestlers do as well. Apparently Finn Martin said on the podcast that they're encouraged to do that to make them seem edgy, but Devitt took it to a whole new level. I remember that kidnap angle they did when Bullet Club was only like a month old, and they kidnapped a ring guy and like had him in an Abu Ghraib style prison, and all you hear is when they start filming it, all you hear is a fucking camera on. So it's like, yeah, I can imagine Devitt, well, because Devitt basically Bullet Club was his entire concept. So I'm guessing he probably wasn't happy for real. But there you go. Yeah. So, yeah, so that was the mid-card joy of Captain New Japan leaving the regular army for Bullet Club. There you go. And he's now the 27th member of Bullet Club currently active in the world.
How the mighty have fallen.
Yes, this is true. actually, he's the only second... After Takahashi, he's the only second Japanese guy to join Bullet Club. He is Bullet Club Gaijin, as they say. Moving on, we had the reformed GBH, who hadn't really done an awful lot in this particular, well, forever, to be honest, a couple of tag matches here and there when they get chance to, and they defeated Hiroshi Tenzan and Teruyuki Kanematsu, another new young lion, where Hiroshi Tenzan showed his absolutely dire abilities as a motivational speaker, trying to get Kanematsu to go head-on against Maccabi and Onma, and to be fair to Kanematsu... He didn't do bad, really. He got a few drop kicks in and the crowd were well into it. He was like the hottest thing all night. It was like, wow. So worth interesting watch. I don't know if it was it his hometown too. Was he from Kobe? I'm not sure. He's too new to have a Wikipedia page, so I couldn't tell you where he's from, but maybe that was what he did. And then an absolutely hilarious match between Manabu Nakanishi, Yuji Nagata, and Red Dragon, which was just fantastically funny, because Nakanishi did all his power moves on O'Reilly and Fish, and he could throw them around like rag dolls because he's basically a rock that walks very slowly.
He walks basically at the speed of a rock.
Yes, and just
he's basically Golem from Pokemon.
He was never any good. I keep saying this, and I don't want to... Just ridiculous. That's like. Just because he was mates with the Road Warriors.
They do get it wrong sometimes, guys. So.
Yeah. One time IWGP Heavyweight Champion, and I think he beat Hase for that. No, he beat Chono or somebody. I don't know. He won the G1 as well. Good Lord. Anyway.
But who was the guy who beat Kobashi for the GHC title who did nothing ever again? Completely blanking on the name, yeah. But that's the ultimate example of that, where it's like misjudging a guy entirely.
I'm sure we'll get back to that. If you want to have a look that up whilst I do the next couple of matches, you can tell us afterwards.
I will.
Then we had the next championship match, the vacant never openweight six-man tag team championship, and I figured out why. It was really weird because there was only two belts at the end of the match. And then I figured out why. The reason why they lost was because Matt Sydal had transport problems. He was due to defend the championship. They replaced Sydal with Dave Finley and made the match for the vacant championships to keep the championship rolling. They defeat Bullet Club, Adam Cole, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, obviously the Young Bucks, in a really thrilling, entertaining match of 14 minutes and 18 seconds. A Dave Finley and Ricochet put together so many double teams in that match. Kojima just kind of stood there and was like in awe of all this athleticism going on around him.
Yeah.
It was really, really cool. Mr. Watt, what did you think of that?
Yeah, it was a really good match. Like, this was, again, like, spotty, but it was all fitting together, like, really nicely. And, yeah, David Finlay looked really good. And, like, it looks like they're saying transport issues for Matt Sydal, but there's reports maybe he's done with the company entirely. The fact that they just immediately were like, right, let's get the new guy in. We're going to have Ricochet and Finlay teaming up. They, after the match, challenged the Bucks immediately. And it was just like, seamless. Like, if Sydal isn't coming back, they've got they had it ready, you know, what they're going to do next instead. Some of the spots were just really funny, like the brainbuster spot where I don't know why they were doing it, but it was incredible. Like, it just kept getting sillier and sillier, and like where they all took Kojima's chops as well and sold it in all as ridiculously as they could. It's just, yeah, I probably shouldn't love that stuff, but I do. I really do. Love how silly they are. Also, when did the Canadian Destroyer become like a transition move? I meant to mention this earlier, but I've got it in my notes here. Like, about four of these matches, the Canadian Destroyer's been hit and they've just kicked out of it. Like, it's like, didn't that used to be the most devastating move in wrestling?
It's because Petey Williams isn't doing it. And now Petey is retired. No one will ever do it as good as Petey did.
That's true. But when he hit it, they stayed down.
Yeah, I just, there you go.
You know.
Well, yeah, but it's like this match had about five DDTs that everyone just pounced straight up from. So
it's a fair, it's a very fair point.
Yeah,
it's like basically the new DDT.
A DDT used to be a flat out killer for Jake Roberts, Tommy Dreamer, Raven, how many other, Arn Anderson, and now it's just like, yeah, one count.
Yeah.
So, the transport issues is a standard line from New Japan Pro Wrestling for, we're done with this guy. That happened to Brock Lesnar, of all people, as well. So Matt Sydal's in good company. Alex Edwards, what did you think of this?
I thought this was a really fun match, and I think it was the right way to do one of those sort of super spotty multi-man matches where you have all that stuff in there, but like you said, it was sort of put in the right places where there was an actual somewhat of a story you could follow in there as well. I really enjoyed it. And just some of the stuff, like, there was a bit where one of the Bucks, I can't remember which one, went for a springboard. I think they were going for the Meltzer driver, and Ricochet caught him with a springboard cutter, and it was perfectly timed, and it just looked amazing.
Yeah.
I really like Ricochet and Dave Finley as a team. I'm looking forward to them challenging the Bucks. I think that'll be a really good match. And I'm just happy for Dave Finley. Like, he's only recently graduated as a young lion, and now he's won his first title, and he's in a team with a guy who the company has been pushing for a while, and it looks like they're going to go pretty far. I'm just happy for him, and I think this is a really good match.
The best of Super Juniors, he got thrown in, didn't he, last minute?
Yeah,
yeah, he was a replacement for, I think, the Young Bucks were both out, weren't they? And so he was a replacement for one of them.
Yeah, Chase Owens was the other one.
I don't think he got any wins in there.
No.
But I think that did him like the world of good, basically, that he got to showcase like what he could do every night, basically. So,
and that's two Super Juniors.
That's why he's doing so well.
And that's two Super Juniors in a row, wasn't it, that he got thrown in because of injuries of other people, I think. Because he wasn't in Super Juniors last year.
Yeah. I think so.
Are we going to call them Finn O'Shea?
we can do.
I'm on a mood for making up the worst tag team names ever. Let's move on.
Okay, I've got, before we do that, it was Takeshi Rikio.
There you go.
Who beat Kenta Kobashi. There you go.
Yeah, and just guy went nowhere.
One of the worst endings to perhaps the greatest title reign ever.
There you go.
That's nothing to do with New Japan. It just popped into my head while we were talking about Nakanishi.
There you go. And in a future episode, we will probably get to that when we talk about Noah in our Beginner's Guide to Japanese Wrestling, which we will get back to next week. Plug, plug. We'll talk about that at the end. Anyway, next we had Bullet Club defeating Chaos. Well, kind of Chaos. Does it mean Briscoe Brothers are in Chaos now, or are they just associate members?
I think they're unofficial members.
All right.
They sort of team with them sometimes.
Yeah, because they're Yano's partner in Ring of Honor as well now, aren't they? So therefore, they are kind of associate members of Chaos. There's a process. You have to fill forms out to join Chaos, you know. It's hard work. I'm not sure Jay could read them. Anyway, Fale Omega. Fale Omega Tonga and Roa. Defeated Goto, Briscoe, and Ishii with Gorillas of Destiny taking the pinfall over Mark Briscoe. This was interesting because the Briscoe brothers had showed a damn sight more life in this match than they did the couple of nights before. But I think this was really entertaining, an 8-man match. Normally we don't talk about these ones, but this was interesting for the championship perspective, and it kind of gives Gorillas of Destiny a title shot because they've pinned a member of the championship team. That's kind of how it works. So, yeah. I think it was entertaining 12 minutes, and it certainly got a lot of cool stuff in there. Anyone want to comment on that?
I think you pretty much summed it up. It was okay. It was fine. And like you said, it's given the Gorillas of Destiny a reason to have a title shot now. So that's good from a sort of story perspective.
What's your thoughts on Gorillas of Destiny as a tag team at the moment? Because they worked in the Indies together, obviously, because for those of you who don't know, they're adoptive brothers because they're Haku's sons. Well, Tama Tonga is adopted and Tongaroa is his actual like blood son. So they are brothers, and they've worked together in Japan, sorry, in America as indie wrestlers. And then obviously they got interrupted because Tama Tonga signed with New Japan and Roa signed with WWE and then TNA. And now they're back together. They do some definitely cool and interesting things, but I think the big push for them is that Tonga's running G1. He had some really good matches and has really grown as a performer. So I think the matches with the Briscoes would be a damn sight more interesting than they would have been a year ago. Alex, any thoughts?
I like Tama Tonga. Tangaroa is okay. Like, he was in WWE as Camacho, and he just played a basic sort of henchman for Hunico at the time, who's now Sin Cara.
Yeah.
And I guess he's in that same sort of role where he's not a henchman, but he's just sort of the muscle of the team. And I think he does okay in that role. I don't know. We spoke about it with Tama Tonga back in the G1, where he's good, but can sort of have trouble connecting with the crowd in certain places and in certain matches. And I think that's a problem for them as a team as well, where they can be a bit hit and miss. So I'm not really sure. Was it them that lost the titles when the Briscoes won them? The Briscoes beat them for the titles?
Yeah,
the
Briscoes beat them for the titles at it was Invasion Attack, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess it shows when I kind of remember that match that well,
how good that
could have been. So I don't know. I'm not sure how excited I am to see them go back to this feud, and I'm not sure how excited I am for them as a team, but I think Tama Tonga's good and he could definitely go somewhere. It's just sort of figuring out that sort of connection issue.
Mm, yeah. Do you want to say anything on this, Alex? What?
I pretty much agree with that. I think Tangaroa is the weak link, basically. But at the same time, like, I agree on the Tama Tonga stuff, and he is good and he is improving, but without being, I don't know if I've said this on previous podcasts or not, but without being harsh, in New Japan, it's like being good isn't any help, really. Like,
no.
Everyone's good.
Yeah.
Like, most people are better than good. Like, there's a lot of very good wrestlers all wanting to be, like, in the spotlight there. So it's sort of tough, the position he's in. Like, I'm glad that he's getting, like, more of a push in the tag team, but yeah, there's definitely something missing. They're not that exciting, but then we'll see what the match with the Briscoes is like. I can't really remember what the last match was like, which says that it probably wasn't all that great. So, but the Briscoes are obviously like a fantastic team, so hopefully they can bring out the best in the gorillas of destiny.
That's
the name, isn't it?
I'm just wondering how many Harambe references are going to get in there with that name.
That is a very good point. Yeah,
I did like Tonga's promo, because he got all the emphasis in just the right places. These belts belong to God, and it's like, whoa, you've been practicing that, haven't you?
You've been doing that in front of the mirror.
Aye, yeah. Dusty's thought process on doing your promos. Anyway, move on. Match 7. Los Ingobernables, Deja Bomb, Bushi Evil and Sanada defeat Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson and Kushida in a very good match. Obviously, you had Kushida gunning for Bushi and Evil, gunning for everybody. Juice Robinson had a pretty good tour, and he had some good matches, and this was another one. Getting further up the card, hanging with the big boys. Again, another graduate of the dojo recently, and he's done some good stuff, I thought, and I think he was a bit of a standout in this little match.
But it's just another sort of multi-man match on a show of multi-man matches.
Yeah.
It's funny as well that we basically then had this match again in the main event for a moment.
Yeah, it was interesting. One of the most bizarre matches was match 8, which was essentially Chaos versus Noah Regular Army, except one of them who's a member of Chaos. So it was Gedo and Jedo with Kazuchika Okada and Yoshihashi, so the world-class tag team, the Rainmaker and Yoshihashi, against Atsushi Kotoge, Daisuke Harada, Naomichi Marufuji, and Toru Yano, who obviously is in Chaos, which is just weird.
But were they just wandering around backstage and were like, we need another partner, and Yano was just like trying to sell his book in the corner or something.
Yano and Marufuji are GHC tag champions, aren't they?
Yeah, so it would be weird if you didn't have them together.
For some reason.
Yeah, they beat Killer Elite Squad for the championship a couple of months back, which is, yeah. So you kind of have to have them together. And kind of Yano was kind of like backing away from any like major controversy with his Chaos friends. He wrestled them in his usual Yano-y style of pulling hair and stuff. But he kind of like backed off any confrontations at the end, but not too much. He was kind of, it was backing up his Noah buds. He was doing his thing. But you get this all the time, like in New Japan, where like there'll be a bit of dissension and it'll just all get smoothed away by the time they need to tag together again. So,
well, you say that. I think I saw it announced earlier this week that so there's a Noah show coming up where Gedo and Jado are challenging Katoge and Harada for the GHC Junior Tag Titles. And Okada and Yoshihashi are actually teaming up to challenge Marufuji and Yano for the GHC Heavyweight Tag Titles.
Well, that's interesting. So that could be... Yeah, I suppose they have gone...
So that was sort of at the end of this one where Okada and Yoshihashi were getting in Marufuji's face over the belts. That sort of actually led to something, and they're now challenging for those belts.
Interesting. We'll have to see how that pans out. But usually this doesn't happen much, does it? Really, Chaos versus Chaos is the forbidden match. You don't do that. So maybe they're just trying to do something different. Then we can move on to the main event. Tetsuya Naito defeating Michael Elgin for the Intercontinental Championship. I think probably the best match of the entire series for me. Really interesting. I love Naito at the moment. I think we all do. He's just been absolutely amazing. But a really well-told story as well. This wasn't all high spots. This was really pushing forward with the knee injury and telling the complete story that lasted for the whole tour. And I think it was really well done. Alex Edwards, what did you think of this particular main event?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a really good match. And I think also that it was the best one of the three shows overall. I mean, back in the G1, I was talking about not being too much of a fan of Elgin. But I think he did really well in this match. I think they told that story of his knee injury and Naito just targeting his leg throughout the whole thing. And he actually sold it, and I thought it was good. He hit some impressive sort of big power moves in there. There was one in particular, he hit a sort of a lifting Falcon Arrow from the apron up to the second rope, then down, and it just looked crazy. And yeah, I think overall the match was good. Again, you had the sort of token interference in there.
Yeah.
But then you had Elgin hit a powerbomb on Bushi to LIJ on the outside, which was crazy. I think the main thing with that interference in the post-match as well was the mystery LIJ guy that was there for Bushi's match and has been there for sort of the last few LIJ matches. He wasn't there at all for this one. He just sort of completely disappeared. So I'm wondering if they now sort of dropped that idea, or do we know who he was meant to be or anything? It was just he sort of completely disappeared.
I've no idea, really. So, I don't know. Alex, the other Alex, have you heard anything?
Other Alex? No, I wondered exactly the same thing, because, yeah, you would have thought whoever that was would be running out there as well.
This would be where he got revealed, if anything.
Well, maybe they
were... they're going to bring it back for the King of Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It's like, that's the big show. That's where the most eyes are going to be, isn't it? So,
I don't think it is, but it could be something to do with this time bomb thing. But I think that's more likely to be...
Suzuki,
yeah.
Yeah.
We'll Unless see. Suzuki's going to suddenly show up as a member of Los Ignorados, I'd love it. Yeah, be amazing.
Yeah, but you couldn't have two egos, storyline egos, that big in the same faction. It would explode.
No.
What did you think of this match, though, Alex?
Yeah, pretty much agree with what you guys have said. I think it was the best match from the shows. They told a really good story. Naito, is he the best wrestler of the year so far? Like, I'm struggling to think of someone who's had a better year, really, all round across every facet of the game kind of thing. Like, I just think he's tremendous. I think, like, it's the right call if they're going to keep him out of the IWGP title picture, which I'm still not personally convinced is the right move, because I think he's the most exciting wrestler they have at the moment. But if that's the way they're going to go, then putting the IC title on him and having him in that sort of Nakamura style position of making that belt as prestigious as the world title is the way to go. Also, the other thing was Elgin kicked out of the first Destino, which is he the first guy to do that?
Yeah, it took two to put him away. Yeah. Which would
so that shows how much how much stock they have in Elgin, how much faith they have in him. Which it did anyway when he won the IC title. Really, they're obviously like he's really won them over.
Yeah. I was looking at Naito. I was thinking about that because if you look at the run that made them the most success. Well, as New Japan as a whole, was the run with Tanahashi as the heavyweight champion and Nakamura as the Intercontinental champion, and those essentially being two separate divisions, and they were the aces of those divisions. So you had two aces to look at. If you don't like this guy, then you might like this guy. And I think that's possibly what they could do in Naito. And you've got to remember as well, Nakamura was a heel when he won the Intercontinental Championship and made that his own. So it's something they could do with that. Naito's a heel all the way, but he doesn't necessarily portray it that way. And he was so over in this match.
Mm.
You know, the fans were cheering for Elgin, but when he won the championship, the place exploded.
It's the standard thing, though. Like, everyone says, not to mention WWE too much, but obviously people are saying they should do it with Roman Reigns. Like, you know, Naito was the blandest guy on the roster. Turn him heel. He shows all this personality and incredible character that no one had seen before. Now he's cool and everyone loves him, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And it is just like, yeah, it's working. It's working for him, certainly. Yeah, so we should actually just do a bit of a quick preview of King of Pro Wrestling, as we've talked about the matches, and to give everyone an idea. Those matches I'll go through all of them. So Bullet Club, Adam Cole, Bad Luck Fale, and Yujihiro Takahashi versus Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, Will Ospreay, and Yoshihashi. Bobby Fish, Ryosuke Taguchi, Togi Makabe, and Tomoyako Honma versus Beretta, Jado, Rocky Romero, and Tori Yano. Tori Yano's back in Chaos for that match. Go Shiozaki, Katsuyuki Nakajima, Masa Kitayama, and Maibak Taniguchi versus Hiroshi Tenzan, Manabu Nakanishi, Satoshi Kojima, and Yuji Nagata. That's the third generation. So it's Noah versus the third generation. That's going to be interesting. And then the Young Bucks versus Dave Finley and Ricochet defending, or Finochet, as we said earlier, defending the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championships. The Briscoes versus Guerrillas of Destiny. Los Ignorables, Bushi, Evil, Sonata, and Naito versus Tanahashi, Lethal, Kushida, and Michael Elgin. Oh, yes. Should remember to remind you, remind you or just tell you, because you probably don't, you might not know if you don't follow Ring of Honor Wrestling. Jay Lethal was a member of Los Ignorables. He is no longer a member of Los Ignorables because they decided he was not Tranquilio. There you go. So he's out. Cool. There you go. Truth Martini will be working as a face in New Japan Pro Wrestling from now on. Work that one out.
Very interesting.
Katsuyori Shibata versus Kyle O'Reilly for the Never Openweight Championship. Kenny Omega versus Hiroki Goto for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship Challenge Right Certificate for Wrestle Kingdom. And finally, Kazuchika Okada will defend his IWGP Heavyweight Championship against Naomichi Marufuji in the main event. Wow, that's a hell of a loaded card. Anything you want to say about that, gentlemen? We'll start with Alex Watts.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty, isn't it? some very nice matches on there. Like, the one is Okada Marufuji, which I think we're all very much looking forward to. They had a really good match in the G1, but that was very much telling the story that Marufuji was like, he dominated Okada a lot in that match. I think this one they'll do a much more even bout. I think it'll be, yeah, well, goes without saying how good they both are, so could be a potential match of the year candidate, I would think, between those two.
Mr. Edwards, what do you think?
Yeah, those top three matches especially look just, I can't wait for this now. That Okada Marufuji match was one of my favourite of the G1, and I'm really glad that we're seeing it again. And then Goto and Omega, the finals of the G1, we all like we ranted and raved about how amazing that was at the time, and so again I'm happy to see it again. Shibata and O'Reilly, I'm interested to see A, if Shibata makes it, and then B, if he does, what sort of condition he's in. I wonder if we'll get a similar sort of thing to this Bobby Fish match where they take it a bit slower and do a bit more sort of groundwork to sort of get around him not being able to do too much.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think, yeah, the show overall looks like it's going to be great, and those top three matches especially, I really can't wait.
Yeah, it should be definitely an interesting show, and which we will bring you coverage of in a couple of weeks' time. Next week, though, we are back to our beginner's guide to Japan, and we will be looking at the birth of Strong Style, which is the next episode, which we trailed, I think, last week. We're going to look at how Antonio Inoki built the second biggest company in pro wrestling. And we're going to look at Strong Style and how it got started and what's the difference between Strong Style and other forms of wrestling. We're not sure who's on that show yet. It may be these two gentlemen. Mr. Alex Edwards, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
That's okay. And you're Alex_Edwards on Twitter, I believe.
Alex_Edwards_.
Underscore. Missed that one out.
And that sneaky one at the end.
Yeah, a sneaky underscore. And then we have Mr. Alex Watt, whose Twitter handle I always get wrong. So I'll let him say it himself.
It's at AlexWatt187.
There you go.
Is the handle. Although it is tempting to change it to at AlexWattBaby. But I'm going to resist the urge to do that.
Oh, yeah. You're going to stick with that for a while, I can tell, can't you?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Are you just like, you know, shouting that out at the Trafford Centre on a weekend?
Just shout it out in the office.
Stick your head out the window. Oh, God. Unilad must be a wonderful place to work.
It is fun, yeah.
There you go. Just impersonating wrestlers for the week. There you go.
Yeah. To be fair, I do that wherever I work, so whether people like it or not.
Don't stick that on your CV, will you? All right, then. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Take care.